follows the public circle of the union. Quote, I'm very early in the video of the country. They pay it Monday when they pay it in the group.
All the hands are going to be in. City of Life. City of Life. City of Pedro City.
Here.
City of Pichu. City of Jeter Osprey. City of Pedro.
Here.
City of India.
Here.
City of Pichu.
Here.
City of Palm Desert. City of Palm Springs.
Here.
City of Gresham Mirage. County of Riverside.
Here.
Lauren Martinez, other community. Chair of the Board.
Thank you. Thank you. Very good. Mr. President.
Vice President.
Give the flag of the United States of America to the Republic of its fans, all the nation, for your
I'm great with our team. We have done raised hands in the gallery.
Great meeting. Welcome back, everyone in person. We will be doing this package for the technical difficulties or long routine, but we'll do this in the we'll move on to the next item. Item 5, chair, member, feedback staff.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move on to the board that is starting this meeting. We should be doing very well on this. I have decided to also, as it is moving as bankers, so we have great appreciation to all the specialists. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the response to the
we just a few introductory comments. First of all, for those of you who've never been to 119, welcome. This is the CBAC conference room. And this is a bit of a first for us. As the chair mentioned, it's our first time using Zoom to conduct hybrid meetings. What you see in the center, for those of you who've been to one of our meetings in the last month, these owls are talking to each other to make sure our colleague here in City of Blight and anyone on Zoom can see us as we table. And hopefully we will use this as a format in the future. And if you are a committee member and you want to participate by Zoom, as you might know from your own jurisdictions, we do need to note the video conferencing location ahead of time, which is and meetings as well. We make some last minute accommodations if something is not supposed to be. And then,
so, we just finished our budget meeting in the valley. The state, to be honest with you. It was an incredible one, I think, for that. I'll say it's a very very, very big love. Especially extremely important to me. Others from all over the world come to the valley and the village, and green weather, and dehydration and things going on. And so we did have the most serious emergency, but we did have some emergency. We didn't want to tell you we were going to run into the transition. We did two events. It's down previous years. Is new to you. And the final thing is to show the work. We also did a most great job, great job. Is it perfect? That means no. We're still working on some things. The divisions. We hope we get better and move on. There's a lot of conversation and we already prepped for the next year. We haven't heard that we have another one coming in our program called culture. So hopefully we're going to be here for a long time. So just keep working together to. And also, we can still do 244, which is in all the situation that's been happening as well.
We can look at both of these bills and
asking for letters as well too. So I know that what came before us, I might want to check with Aaron on that report. I think they have letters of support too. And then a public thanks to Ben Cadron and Jim Curtis. I had the opportunity on going to go on a security tour of the festival area. And if you have not done that, I would encourage you to maybe do that. And they're going to be thrilled when you say, hey, if they've done more. But as an Evergreen City member, it was very interesting and very eye-opening as well, too. So I want to publicly thank them for that as well.
Noted and appreciated. I can pass that word along, and it is a great idea, especially for this committee. It is a very intricate operation, and if we see it behind the scenes for what it is, I think we'll be impressed, and I think it's going to be better. Okay. And it works with collaboration amongst all the cities, so I appreciate that. And for the record, Councilmember Greg Rhodes here, President Otis, and also Representative Raul Caliente, John Rivera. So we'll move on.
Yeah, switching the county.
Oh, oh, and
yes,
okay, Michelle. We switched. Oh, okay, you guys pulling magic on me. All right, so that will complete chair, committee members, and feedback staff. And we'll move on to item number six, which I think is very important and something I want to encourage now and in the future for this committee. Because our individuals and their staff are boots in the ground every day. And so you have a first idea of what's going on in our communities. And we need the collaboration and also the input from our ex officio members so we can make educated decisions as a committee. So I'd like to open up this next item, ex officio updates, for any of our ex officios who were present who would like to give an update on their city or speak on state affairs.
Mike Kobler, Captain, Palm Springs PD. Just to give an update on our crime trends. When we compared 22 to the year previous, we saw an overall 6% reduction in total crime, an 8% reduction in violent crime, and a 5% reduction in property crime. Overall, the biggest number that caught my eyes, what really impacts our citizens, our residential burglaries. We saw a 28% decrease there. So we went from 304 residential burglaries to 219 in 2022, which is a big drop, considering we have more and more people living out here a lot of time. So, and then unfortunately, the other statistic that really concerned Palm Springs PD is we saw a 72% increase on assaults on officers.
On what, sir?
Assaults on officers. Wow. So in 21, we had 25, and then in 22, we had 43. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of people just not really wanting to go with the program, follow orders, and then be combative with our staff.
Great. Thanks.
Is there any code?
Go ahead.
Any correlation between that and the Coachella festivals? I mean, is it more during when they're all?
You know, Coachella was, both Coachella festivals and Stagecoach were smooth sailing for us. I mean, we have the bulk of the hotel rooms here in the Valley. They're busy when everybody comes back into town, but during the day, everybody's down at the festivals in India. So we really don't have any of those issues in Palm Springs.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if I ask everyone, if you're speaking, please turn your microphones on. And just a reminder, we do have a update on crime trends. So I will appreciate your report. But we do have a data on items. So, but thank you for your report. And that was good.
I just wanted to comment on that. What he was saying, another, I think, probably portion of why the crime trends like that would have been up is all the dismissals that are going on in the county. Those have, there's been a couple thousand, the majority, probably 80% of those were in the Coachella Valley, which emboldened a lot of the criminals on the street. That is now seems to be under more control as so many of them have been dismissed and more courtrooms have opened up. So we haven't seen a dismissal in the district attorney's office in quite a bit of time, but I definitely think that correlates to the uptick in crime when everyone knows that they can either get the case dismissed or they're not going to stay the night in jail.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, good morning. Steve Schott, Deputy Chief of Desert Hot Springs. Just to go along with my counterpart here from Palm Springs, Desert Hot Springs, and I'm going to preface this with the way we've been collecting our crime stats. As you know, all agencies are now reporting through NIRS. We had a bit of a hiccup in our reporting system in that this is 2023 is going to actually be our first year, full year, being able to report in NIRS. Last year, we started in 2021. Towards the end of the year, we had gone to a new report management system, which unfortunately ended up not working for us. So we had to go back to a previous one, and that system was not set up yet for NIBR. So for 2022, the first half of the year until July, we reported not using the NIBR system, but through the DOJ and then the brain.
UCR,
excuse me, yeah. And then starting in July, we did the NIBR. So it was half and half a year. And it's not an apples to apples comparison, as I'm sure you folks all know, when you're comparing UCR numbers and NIBR's numbers, there's a lot more information given with the NIBR's numbers. But what I can tell you so far for 2023, we're on track really to what we looked at last year at around the same time. We do have one homicide in Desert Hot Springs so far this year. Same time last year, we didn't have any. But what we normally see, we're talking about trends for Desert Hot Springs. Normally we see towards the middle summer, end of summer, is when we start getting an uptick, especially in violent type crime. And I think that has a lot to do with kind of the weather and folks getting tired of 115, 120 degree weather. And so that plays a big part what we've seen the last several years as far as when that uptick comes from us. But violent crime is down, but we do have an increase in property crime, specifically in retail theft type things, petty theft, shoplifting type things, the catalytic converter thefts. So those type of thefts, those are up. And again, it goes back to, unfortunately, one is we are catching these folks, but once we catch them, it's one, getting them in the jail, and two, having them accountable through the court system. And a lot of that stuff, as mentioned, has been thrown out, or they're just getting a slap on the wrist and they're not being held accountable for that. There is current legislative law, obviously, going on looking at that and looking at Proposition 47, AB 109, those type of events to find out what's working, what hasn't worked. So hopefully in the near future, we'll see some changes in that legislation. Vehicle theft is our biggest thing, and we're tracking about 200 vehicle thefts a year. We're still on track to hit that this year. So unfortunately, that's a big thing. We do find that a lot of the theft in our city is crimes of opportunity. So again, folks leaving their keys in the car running because it's hot out. Someone coming by and they need a ride. So they take that either in the city or just outside of the city. So we are getting a lot of recoveries both in our city and neighboring cities. But it is one of those thefts that folks can really prevent. Don't make yourself an easy target. Lock your vehicle even on those hot days. Don't leave your keys in the car. And the same thing goes for their houses and stuff like that. So I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any specific questions.
Great. Thank you for the update. And I appreciate that. And those propositions that I was looking at, the lines, and say that I think we need to bring those back so we can have an updated understanding of what they are and what those impacts have been on our communities. There's been a significant impact on them. And, I know a lot of times we report that numbers and statistics are down. One of those reasons why they're down is because laws have changed. So I think we really need to look at those laws so we can get updated on those. So I appreciate your update.
Rick Sanchez from Casino City. I understand we're talking about crime trends. I'm not sure if you wanted us to wait.
Thank you. In regards to the catalytic converters, I'm not sure if it was enacted, but I think there was a law requiring registration and a serial number on catalytic converters. Is that only for older ones prior to that, or is it impacting any way in which they are sold and disposed of? Is there going to be impact of that?
Yeah, I haven't seen the impact of it. And in the city, in Desert Hot Springs, we did enact Unicode section for that they have to be serialized, that if individuals are in possession of one, you have to show proof of ownership and that serialized number on there. And I know at the state level, they were working on the registration, but I haven't seen any positive impact anyways in our city from that.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
There you go. Chief,
Mark Contreras, Cathedral City Fire Chief. One of the things we've seen, and the county just took action, I think it was last month, with AMR response times to the ambulances. We used to, I would say, do a much better job looking at the statistics of mutual aid, where even though Cathedral City has their own ambulance, we would accommodate. But coming out of COVID, AMR has really had challenges with hiring. to get their staffing up to the appropriate levels. Where we've ultimately seen that is the longer response times and ultimately the lack of what we call border drops or mutual aid, them being able to come into our city to back us up. So that's ultimately causing us, the council voted to add another ambulance. So it doesn't allow us to cover our ground, but without knowing that we're going to get something back if we do send, has affected our auto aid, specifically an ambulance. And we've seen a significant drop in response times with AMR countywide. So they've said that they've come out and they're trying to do everything they can to do higher, but at the end of the day, there's less ambulance to service in the valley.
Thank you. Sanchez, you want to move to
I can wait till we get to crime practice. Yes. We'll wait for that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have any further updates? Chief, yes. Join us, please.
Is it live on?
Yes, sir.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I just want to take an opportunity to introduce myself, Paul Morado, Fire Chief for Palm Springs Fire Department. And what an honor it is, Mayor, nice to see you here. What an honor it is to be part of this committee and be part of a valley that takes public safety so seriously. It's been so generous with our public safety partners. So I look forward to participating with this committee, being an active member. Nice to see you, Chief, and look forward to working with you. We share a border with the Cathedral City and the rest of our partners. I just want to let you know we're going to be an active member in this community and looking forward to that. A couple statistics this weekend, we have some exterior fires, and what a great partnership with our police department. Those fires, we had an arrest made, and we're looking into that suspect to see if there are any further fires that they've been caused earlier in the month. So, again, I'm excited to be here and looking forward to continuing this partnership. And if you have any questions for me, all right, great. Thank you very much.
And Chief, yes, join us here at the table. And if I ask where are you coming from? Are you here locally or are you coming from the city?
Well, I spent the last 27 years working for the city of Long Beach. So I have a history of working as a firefighter, a paramedic, a captain, battalion chief, most recently assistant fire chief. So I've had the opportunity to oversee many different operations within the city, many different emergency situations. But what an opportunity to come to the Valley where my family had ties for the past decade. You guys may have known my wife was a journalist here in the Valley for almost a decade. We had such an opportunity to share the stories with the people here, really network with the community. And one thing that stuck with me is the people. The people here that will give you the shirt off their back, come together when times get rough. And I always thought if there was an opportunity to come out here and be part of this family, and sure enough, this position came open and I'm so honored to be here. And I'm looking forward to being part of this family here.
Great, great. Welcome.
Thank you so much. And you know what? The city manager has a meeting that starts here in just a few minutes. I'm going to excuse myself. But again, you know what? Plan on our department being part of this community here and engaged with you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate your service. Thank you, Mayor. Right. So that will conclude our official days, and I appreciate both of those as well. It's been a while since we've been in person. We've been on Zoom, so it's been kind of tough. However, we'll move on to the next item, which is consent calendar approval of the February 13th, which is the Republican Committee meeting.
Second,
we have a motion by the city, second by the committee. I do a roll call vote.
No,
roll call.
Sorry, just ask for us.
Okay. Okay. So, see, I told you we're using this again. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any nays?
Aye.
Thank you, sir. Any abstentions? Nays? City calendar passes. And so, we'll move on to the next item, which is item number 8. It's a discussion and action item, and it's the school resource officer in the Coachella Valley, and. It will be handled by our assistant executive director, Jerry Feldman.
Chair, good
Committee members, hello again. Before you is an item that was requested from the city of La Quinta, and in conjunction with the chair, we've added it to your agenda. We have invited the three school districts here under Desert Sands, was able to make it. The other two are not here, though I believe we do have somebody on Zoom from Coachella Unified if they want to raise their hand and participate when the time comes. A little bit of kind of overview of this item here. As you all know, we have three school districts in the Coachella Valley, and two of those school districts have school resource officers through agreements that you all are probably more familiar with than I am, and that is for local police and city agreements. The Coachella Valley Unified School District uses a different model for its school security, and that is the restorative justice model. In your packet, we have included some background on this model, as well as a recent Desert Sun story that you may have seen. The model, the school district shifted to this model in 2018, and it's designed to look at a broader physical and socio-emotional security. And they do that by using campus security officers instead of your local police officers. And they also engage in teacher and staff training. And in recent months, you've probably heard a lot about this. There have been some pushback from the community in the form of protests, and there's been quite a bit of discussion by the school board as well, including a special meeting that was held last week to respond to some of the community concerns about this model. The city of La Quinta is one of those that has a voice concern with the model. I'll let Councilmember Pena describe that in a little bit more detail. The city's letter is in your packet, and there is calls to increase the security and go to more of the model that you see in the other two school districts. So that is my super brief. The chair told me to be super brief. So that is my super brief presentation. With this item, frankly, this is a little bit out of the scope of our legislative platform. So when we received a request to take a position, it's not within the scope of our current legislative platform. So we are asking you all for your recommendation on whether CBAC should take a position on this item. Should this committee take action, it would be presented to the executive committee. So with that, the chair is okay with that. I'll turn it over to Councilmember Vanya for further discussion.
Thank you, Erica. And thank you for that presentation. Obviously, we had this discussion some time ago when we had all the school districts here that talked about their security and what they do on each one of their campuses. La Quinta is kind of unique. We're in both school districts. We're both Coachella Valley Unified and Desert Sands. So we had a request from a number of our residents that are either teachers or have children at that school attend and ask us why Coachella Valley Unified doesn't provide school resource officers on campus. So we raised the issue, raised the question, and ask the school board to at least consider it. We understand the restorative justice model, whether it's working or not, can be debated. But I think there's room for a combination of both having school resource officers and restorative justice model too. They've had it since 2018. I don't believe, and I'm sure that they're on listening now, I don't believe that they've allocated much money to that model. And whether it's working, my question to them would be, how many school psychologists are on campus now, if any, and if there are any plans to hire some of those. I think the restorative justice model uses school psychologists to approach school problems and whether it's really had any impact or not. So we will continue to pursue the matter, whether we decide to have a letter of support or not, or recommend it. That's neither here nor there. I think that certainly raising the issue before this committee is the concern that we have, and bringing it forward to have that discussion in the public forum on what works and what doesn't work. So with that, I'll open it up for questions or let other comments from other committee members go forward.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I can, do we have someone from the CV on Zoom?
Mr.
President.
We do have
someone. Oh, are they just listening in? Or
I believe we have someone listening in, but we've not heard from them that they were able to attend in terms of participation.
Oh, okay.
But we do have Desert Sands here in the audience.
Yeah.
What their model
is. I think I said Desert Sands, their relationship with our police departments and how that function with the intersection of our school district, if you could join us.
Good morning, Steve Bagg. My name is Jordan Kino. I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Business Services for the San Diego High School District. We have three different agreements between all the different cities that we partner with. We have two MOUs for a cost sharing agreement directly with Palm Desert and the city of La Quinta. And then with Indio, we have a direct agreement with the city of Indio. So things are working out pretty well for us. We have a model of one SRO at every high school, and then we move to a sharing of an SRO between our middle schools. In addition to that, we have security agents at all of our elementary schools as well, and our middle schools. So we typically look at a model of as a ratio around 501 with regard to our security agents. We want to make sure that at all times there's two people that are able to respond to any incident on any of our campuses. But other than that, just a real brief summary. The partnerships have been working well, and we continue to entertain them.
Great.
Quick question. You know, one of the issues that's been raised is that there has been potentially bias against minority students. For having school resource officers on campus. Have you ever had that come up? Has anybody ever been reported to immigration by school resource officers?
We haven't had those types of challenges or complaints coming from our district. We've had one or two off ones where we've encountered that at a board meeting where we spoke directly with those commenters. But other than that, it seems that the community has been very supportive.
Thank you. Mayor?
Do you have the numbers, though? Do you know what the racial backgrounds are of all of the students that have been suspended at your school? And do you see trends at all?
I don't have that information with me, but that's certainly something that we can gather and share with the committee.
Thank you.
Hello. Have you considered using the restorative justice model? And if so, what guided you in your decision?
So we have a number of student supports that address mental health. That's not an area that I particularly oversee, but with the onset of when COVID started, we bolstered not only our made sure that we were and continuing our support with our security division, but also with additional counselors, psychologists, and mental health therapists. So I would say it's a combination of both models.
Any further questions? I just have two questions. One is, what kind of training do our resource officers receive as far as illicit bias training?
So I don't have all of that. I don't know if I can answer that directly. Our security, chief of security wasn't able to attend, but I believe that is directly with the police departments. They run their invisibility program training.
The second is, what is the mission of our security versus our school resource officer? A little bit of a complication, and that our officers are there to arrest and apprehend students. And through my experience and my study with SROs, I don't think that's accurate. And maybe you just become a.
Yeah, you speak a little bit of that. And even our security manager, Chandler, maybe you want to come up?
Yeah.
Sure.
Good morning. Ryan Chandler, I'm a security manager for Desert San Diego High School District. So our SROs implement a school community policing approach. So they're building relationships. They're out there with the kids. They're out there having conversations with them versus out there trying to do what like the security agent would do. They're out there just, you know, building those bonds and stuff like that. And they're not out there like actively trying to like, you know, find criminal stuff on the school site per se. But they're just trying to build those bonds and those relationships.
in particular, like with our school sites, like the McKinney High School, and as well as like Indio Shadow Hills, like with Officer Lopez, they do cadet programs. So that's another way of them building relationships with the kids. McKinney High School has a pretty big cadet program that Officer Casas or Deputy Casas has. So that's just part of they do part of like one of the part of the things that they do their building relationships. They do class presentations. They walk with our security agents and help them out, just kind of talking to kids and having those conversations. There are like on the other side of things, they do some counseling with students and their parents. So if they do have some stuff going on, we'll sit down with the parent and the student and have a conversation with them and try to help them and maybe give them some community resources or outside resources if they need it, like any kind of like mental health stuff that they can get through the county. They are also like liaison with our school attendance review boards, the probation department, and just other law enforcement officials. So it's been huge. I mean, honestly, it's neat to see them out there, especially like our SROs. And you see kids come back constantly after they graduate, and we'll see them out on the street, or the interaction with them is just huge. Hey, Officer so and so, or hey, Deputy so and so. So I don't know, hopefully that kind of answers that question.
What is the role of the SROs in relation to suspensions and expulsions?
Nothing. They have nothing to do, and maybe I can clarify a little bit on that, but they have nothing to do with that. They take no role in that at all.
Chair, is it possible to hear from Coachella Valley who saw a drop in suspensions after they removed SRO officers? So it'd be helpful to know what the role of SRO officers was in Coachella Valley Unified. In relation to suspensions, and just learn more about that connection.
Yes, I mean, if there's someone in Coachella that's online who would like to speak, I believe you did reach out to their security staff. They aren't able to attend, but if there is someone that's online that would like to speak, by all means, please join us for the conversation.
Right, and we're hoping that all three school districts be represented here, so we can have that discussion as well too, to get some of the facts out there. And I think that's what we're in search of is facts and what works, what doesn't work, how we can improve it. We would hope that it would be here.
Yeah, and let's say I'll find that a little bit more. Literally there's a line in the sand where they have nothing to do with the administrative side of things. It's more of a, if we do have like a law enforcement issue that maybe it extends outside of the school site with one of our students, that's something that they're going to assist on. And it's been such a huge help. I'm sure it's a huge help for the police departments themselves as well, because if they have to extend a search to the home or if they have to do something based on what we have at a school site, it kind of lessens the burden a little bit on the actual police department for the patrol officers, right? Because we have an SRO that, one, they have a bond with those kids. They know exactly who we're talking to and dealing with. But as far as like suspensions, anything administratively, there's a line. They don't have anything to do with that. That's strictly with what our principals and our admin staff deal with. So, yep.
But we can follow up with that as well.
Yeah, I have a question for him about how would he envision a combination of SRO with restorative justice if you had a dedicated restorative justice coordinator who really, coordinated the program. But utilized, how would you envision utilizing that with your SRO? What would become that bond between the two kind of actions? Because we hear talk about having both programs, but I don't know how you can envision having both of them together combined. So yeah. How do you see that?
I think that question would be better answered with a team from the district, because it's a community at our district that handles all levels of student support. In addition to our security department, we have our child welfare and attendance department that handles student discipline, interventions with the student. And I would say I'm not qualified to answer that kind of question.
Well, I wonder if your security manager could kind of, in his perspective, see how that he could see that, right? Because he would potentially be the one that has to work with something.
I would still give the same answer, because he only deals with one side of the equation. He doesn't deal with the other aspect of things. So again, I think it would be unfair to the committee if we didn't have that other perspective.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have a particular question, although I appreciate all that you have said, but I just wanted to share. So in a previous life, 10 years or so ago, I was for a time, a couple of years, I was the police chief for the city of La Quinta and the city of Coachella in my role as a captain in the sheriff's department. And so this discussion and what has happened is very interesting. But I can share that back then, if you do need this balance with the school district and the law enforcement agency, and what I hear here, and I'm very grateful, is that you work hard to maintain that balance in the school district. There was a time that even in Desert Sands at some of the schools, I know when I was the Kingdom police chief, that you would get school staff that they were very busy, but they didn't want to necessarily handle the disciplinary role. And so they would tend to try to pull the law enforcement into the discipline part of it, not just the law enforcement part of it. So it took the training, it took the discipline, the self-control on the part of the law enforcement agency, but also the part of the school district to then fix that. So I think you're always gonna have this proper push-pull. But what you described as where the law enforcement officer is really counterintuitive. What I hear a lot here lately is they really should be bonding with the kids, but they're not handling the school discipline. Yes, they'll handle legal issues, and of course they'll handle these the violence and those types of issues, either coming from within the school or coming from the community into the school. The guns in the homes, those types of things, those type of issues. But properly done, you take those principles that are part of the restorative justice model, and they combine with the school resource officer, and you get a whole picture, both of development, proper development and relations with the students, but also protection within the school and the community. What tends to happen, though, if the school district or the law enforcement agency or both are not exercising self-control, is that goes awry. And that's happened in many places. And I believe that that is what we saw happen in the Coachella Valley Unified School District, was that the school district wasn't defining those roles policy-wide for the whole school district. So individual school administrators were then working with the school resource officers and defining that role. And without maybe proper training or policies or a way to report to discuss these on the law enforcement side, then you had them turning into the cop in the school, and they were doing things that actually then were involved in the suspension expulsion. So, I will say, even now as my role on the city council of Peter City, this also came up because Palm Springs Unified had looked at whether they should continue with the school resource officer model. And what we found there is, again, the school wasn't necessarily defining, or the schools, they weren't necessarily defining what the proper role of the officer should be. And to some degree over time, the officers had gotten into things that they probably was not supposed to be their focus. And so that was very problematic. And so I don't think it's perfect over in Palm Springs Unified either, but I think that there's been a real effort, and it's a continuing effort to better define those roles. And so now, my understanding, at least from the city side and then in Cathedral City and probably Palm Springs too, and the school district side, is that we feel that it's better now, although I think it still needs, it's one of those things that just can't be left alone, because it will go awry one way or the other. There are personnel problems and their strengths and weaknesses. So when I see this discussion, I don't feel like for Coachella Valley Unified anymore, 10 years later, that I know exactly what's going on there. But I think what you're seeing is that is off balance, because you don't have that school police officer component. And so there are things that, although security is great, they have their area that they should be handling and focusing on, and you're missing that proper law enforcement component. I would believe that if they could get to a model, much like what I'm hearing, where everybody has their defined role, although they of course interact, but that it has proper policies and monitoring, that that's really the ideal way to do this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes,
to address Mayor Gardner's question, and just as a point of reference, we did invite all the school districts and included in your packet quite a bit from the recent board meetings. The Desert Sun story said that in 2018, CBUSD was suspending nearly 1 in 20 students each school year, which is higher than the state average of about 1 in 30, and that there were higher rates for Black and Native American youth than there were white students at that time. And at the time, there was some push from the community to remove the school resource officer. So fast forward 5 years, since they've moved to this model, the restorative justice model, the suspension rates have fallen and are about on par with state averages. But the Desert Sun didn't quote an exact number, but hopefully that provides a little bit of perspective.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm aware of those numbers. What I'm interested in is what role the SROs had in those suspensions, because we just don't know a lot of the details around it, because they were also implementing restorative justice. So was it adding restorative justice that caused the decrease in suspensions, or was it simply removing SROs? There's just a lot of missing information in the data that we have. And I'll just say in general for this conversation, I don't feel comfortable making a recommendation or having school resource officers in our schools when there's questions that I have about restorative justice program. There's questions I have about the details of how each school district runs their discipline departments. I mean, there's so much missing information that our school boards, they're the ones who are steeped in this, who understand this, who do the expulsions, right? And this body doesn't do that. And I think that we all need a lot more information in order to take a true stance on this. So I do know as well that the city council in Palm Springs is divided on this topic too. So I wouldn't feel comfortable making a recommendation on behalf of Palm Springs without having further discussion with my colleagues.
Thank you. In response to the lack of data and how we would collect that uniformly, the state of California does require that information, and I think it's called the school data report card, and each specific school site is required to have them. They normally are available on the website. If they're not there, I'm sure that they should provide it, and that does include everything from the number of Title I students to the number of arrests, to the breakdown, the type of, not arrests, but suspensions, expulsions. So, I mean, that is something that I have looked forward to in the past, and looking at how the schools that my children have attended and how those trends are. So that is data that can be recorded from the state, or even maybe requested from the district to provide us in bulk. So that would allow some more neutral analysis and not just an objective report of what they're presenting.
That would be helpful.
Great. Well, I appreciate the dialogue and all the input, and my response would be is, I'm in support of our school SROs, and I'm also in support of restorative justice. I believe they coexist. Reason being, our SROs are there, they have a different mission. They're not there to enforce law. If a situation does arise, they have a duty to act and respond. And what that does, it does cut out the response time if something does occur. However, their job isn't to enforce school policy. And restorative justice is on the back end of things. It's correcting the problem without punitive damage, without suspensions, without any case law, without OCS. And I believe that's a good motto. Community competency, restorative dialogue, peacemaking circles. I believe dialogue is important, especially in our communities. When we're talking about some of the communities that have challenges, because they're not starting at school, they're coming from home. With some challenges in some communities. They're coming from some of the different backgrounds. It's not the school, it's not the policy, it's not the curriculum. These issues are coming on campus. And so I believe they can coexist. However, I think as parents, I'm a parent who has a student in Unified, as a policymaker, as a mandated reporter, I believe we have an obligation to make sure our students and staff are in an environment where they're in a learning environment where they feel safe, where they don't have to worry about what's going on, what's waiting for them outside of that door, or what's coming on campus. Because a lot of times, it's folks who come on campus who start these problems. And there are students who have challenges, who need some of that dialogue, who need mental wellness care, believe that as well. But at the same time, these dialogue and circles and teaching making circles don't respond to violent incidents. And we've had violent incidents. And many of them occur at the beginning of the school year. When these students are coming back on campus, you have new kids from different cities. There are a plethora of different things going on. So what I think this would do for us is allow us to have some time to work with our colleagues in our cities and also the school districts and continue this conversation. I don't think this conversation ever goes away, not in our climate. Where our soft targets we have out there, including our school, I think as a public safety committee, this conversation never goes away. Now, as far as what's going on in our school district, I appreciate what Deb Shams is doing. I appreciate what all three unified school districts doing. And I appreciate what the Valley School District is doing, because I think we're all going to have to work together. And I appreciate our coaching bonds who are here, because we all need this training, we all need this dialogue, we have to continue to work together. So I will share one personal story that I have myself. I've been in corrections for 20 plus years. I also worked on one of the reservations locally as a public safety officer. So I've been in law enforcement for about 25 years. One of my relationships with a mentor started in high school. He was our school resource officer. And after I graduated out of high school and my passion was going to law enforcement, we worked together. We met at a conference up in Northern California. And during roll call, he heard my name, I heard his name, and we started a relationship. And the reason why I bring that up is, in the climate that we're in right now, we have to start with this generation and foster those relationships to our law enforcement community. Because the way I see it, and I'm not being biased, I just feel that that relationship has broken down. We just heard about some of the instances where folks are resisting. We need to have this conversation, and there needs to be a good rapport between our law enforcement community and our children. So I would ask that we continue to work with our school district and ask for updates as needed. And also, I don't know, Mr. Payne, if you want to piggyback on it, would you like to request? I just like to have this dialogue continue and continue to work with all of our school districts and support it as well.
Certainly, and I agree with both the mayor and Karina on getting more data. It's all about the data. And I think that that's why we brought the issue up. Like you said, it's not going to go away. We're not sitting here, we don't want to mandate what school districts need to do or not do. That's not our role, but we certainly need to have the information as a public safety committee. So while we're approached in public about what is going on in our schools, that we can at least answer intelligently about what the various roles are between the police and school resource officers and counselors and the like. So I would gladly like this to come back sometime in the future with more data. And as we move forward, understand the issues, both from the school district standpoint as well as the police standpoint. So I don't have any problem continuing this and moving forward. And I wasn't hoping to mandate something that we go forward. I simply wanted to gather information.
No, and I appreciate that. We do that. We need to continue that. But what I'd also like to request, I just had a memory lapse, is that we reach out to CD Unified School District, actually all school districts, and their security staff, and also their board. I know they only have two at a time, because they're on there. But maybe we do a site visit at our one local high schools to actually see. It's not something that's new to CDU and West School District. They did remove them in 2018. But missions changed, data changes, techniques changed. We do have a support of justice, and I like to also see that model. So if they just share that with us as well, because I believe in after the fact, of having these conversations, at least sit down with a person, communicate with them, see that they're human. And this person that you feel is your enemy because you have a certain ideology that you grew up in. I think that's important too. And also for mental health purposes, I think that's important. So I'd like to have maybe a site visit or a round table as well with all school districts and site visit.
Well, and also too, that I know in the city of Kingston, we have 2x2 discussions with the Professor Sands and Coachella Valley Unified. We haven't had one with Coachella Valley Unified in some time. You know, I'll reach out to them. I think our staff has reached out to them, begin those discussions again. So I would hope that we stay in communication with them as well too. So I don't know how better about that. Yeah, we have any long brains. We got to do that as well too. So we have 2x2s. Sure, go on.
And one thing we haven't talked about in this meeting is cost and really understanding that you bring back is the cost of what each city is contributing to Ed Sand and Monster Unified and what the school districts are, you know, with taxpayer money are earning and where that distribution is going across all the districts. So I really want to see what that revenue looks like, right, and how they're properly allocating that money, because I think ultimately we are. You know, cost of public safety goes up every year, but how is that properly allocated? Because I think that also drives the conversation of how many are located where, what is the usage. I was talking to some the former SRO, my relative used to be at SRO at CU High School when I lived there. And you know, the culture there was different in the sense that, you know, you didn't see them around policing or anything like that. They were just there to support and knew that purpose of the role. Right? They weren't like looking around. They'd go out at the recess lunchtime. But I think it's also knowing what that cost is and what if you allocate the SRO that stayed there, how does that help the response time as well, right? So knowing that response time, if an incident occurs in a school site, how quickly you can get a team out there or things like that. So those kind of data, I think we'll be able to bring it back so that we can really have a good analysis of what it looks like, right? We can't, you know, we can talk about getting a resource officer, but we need to look at what the cost is because you have to see both. So that was just my comment on
that. Very important cost.
I can tell you, for Palm Springs Unified, we work with the Cathedral City PD. What it is, you sign an MOU and a contract. So what they do is they pick up the cost or the expense of that officer for 10 months during the school year. Then in that MOU, there's also language in there, like they want them to eat on campus because they want them there at all times and different things like that. So it's actually, they pick up the expense for 10 months while that officer is there. If that officer is going to have an extended vacation or is out ill for a few days, we are obligated to replace that individual there to make sure that they do have someone on campus. They also assist, we have in Cathedral City, a full-time officer dedicated to Cathedral City High School. But at times, they'll also go assist with the middle school or the elementary school or the continuation school. So our relationship has been great as far as our SRO program is concerned. The relationships that they have fostered while on campus, they have done a good role or a good job in defining their role as an SRO compared to security and what their role is. They are not there for the punishment aspect. They don't participate in any type of expulsion or suspension. They are there when they're needed or called upon. But we've also found that the relationships that they have with some of these children and parents have been tremendous, not only for the comfort level, but for the education. Too many times, law enforcement, we're seen as we come and enforce the laws. Well, now they get to see this officer in a different light. Someone who's a counselor, someone who's a therapist, someone who you feel comfortable and confident going to and talking to in private, you know, where you don't have a relationship with maybe somebody patrolling the streets. So it's helped us, you know, not only in that aspect, but in the kids getting to be around an officer in that type of a capacity instead of an enforcement type of capacity that we actively do on a day-to-day basis.
If I can follow up on that comment, my personal anecdote as the former Palm Springs Unified School District student, this is the impact of it that I still remember his name, Officer Spinkola, was present at Desert Springs Middle School. And when there was the unfortunate situation that needed to call law enforcement to my home, seeing a friendly, familiar face did, for me as a child, diffuse that situation.
So I can share that again. However we may feel as members of the community, when we're talking about our children's safety and ability to respond to stressful situations, both on campus and in their home, there is definitely that value of having a game plan.
I just want to follow up on Mr. Figueroa's question about the cost. If I understand what you're saying, the cost is borne not by the city, but by the school district. Is that correct?
Sure. There's an MOU. Each city will have, because obviously different agencies have different rates and things. So you'll have a direct contract with that school district in regards to the officers that you're providing.
Just like we contract for with security for the tennis tournament. It's all paid for by the tennis tournament. I presume that Coachella and Stagecoach, that it's all paid for by them.
Yes.
And so the cost to the city is non-existent.
No, that's not true. No. Palm Springs absolutely pays for.
Why?
Not for the entire SRO, but we do pay for a portion of the SRO. That's a great point.
This has been an informative discussion. I'm also mindful of the time, and you have another item on your agenda. From a staff perspective, we've heard you, and we've certainly heard the specific data requests that you've all raised, including costs and the impact that SROs may or may not have in terms of suspension and their engagement. And so what we will do is we will specific in our request to CB USD in particular, and also respond to all three school districts yet again, and hopefully have a more detailed, if they cannot attend your next meeting, at least have more written information to address your specific questions, and then we could move this item to that agenda.
Your recommendation, or actually March orders, and then we'll move on to the next meeting when we meet back. Correct. Great. So thank you for the dialogue. If you continue, we have a next school year starting in August, I believe. So we do have time to continue the discussion going. And like I said, they'll be on one. Also, we'll move on to item number, actually, the letter P, the information. And currently, with the president of crime trends, we did hear some already officer dentists.
For Cathedral City, just like most cities here in the Coachella Valley, we also did see a significant decrease in most of our numbers. We had two homicides this past year. The year before that, it was three. So our numbers are down. Where we did see an increase in our city was our city for us is basically a crime of opportunity. It's like some of the individuals here share. It's not locking your doors. It's leaving things inside your vehicle for others to see on the front seat. It's just leaving things in your yard. So we did in our city, just like others. And, some of it did have to do with the catalytic converters. There is legislation. They are working on that. I know they actually have specific task forces, federally, where they're going after some of these individuals, because what they're doing is obviously when you steal these catalytic converters, well, they're selling them to somebody, right? So now they're starting to focus their attention on some of these businesses that were purchasing them illegally, because if there's no resale market for them, then there's no need. So I know some of these task forces, I know I read one, it was a big string going on federally where they arrested over 100 people. They were in this big operation with things going on with me. So I think for us, even golf cart thefts were up for us. I mean, and I know that may sound petty, but I mean, we have a lot of country clubs, just like I'm sure Palm Springs and some of these other cities. And so that contributes to some of our numbers. But all in all, we did see a decrease. There will be a significant change. I can let you guys know we are going away from what are known as UCRs to NIBRs. UCRs, what it does, or what it did, was it prioritized. So when I say prioritize, well, if it was a homicide, but they also had different crimes, the homicide would take the priority. Well, now with NIBRs, it's going to hit five different categories. If it was a homicide, with the rape, or whatever, it will hit all five of those. So you will see numbers go up. And like Desert Hot Spring, we also, towards the end of the year, went away from our UCRs to NIBRs. So I can prepare this committee for next year. You will see an increase in numbers, and that it's not based on anything changing. All it is a way that they track the numbers.
Reported. Yeah. Appreciate it. I know we had some crime train reports already. So in the interest of time, I appreciate the reports. And I will move on to all information to the tennis record. It's an update on the Chippewa Valley State Prison and efforts to regulate minor loans. That's all in your packet. And we did hear what comments as well, so we appreciate that update as well. So we'll move on to item number 10 with the public comments on agenda items. And I do have one present, Ms. Carter Lade.
Good morning. My name is Carla Solomon-Belli. I'm a resident at 222 Wagonell Road, Palm Desert. We've owned in Palm Desert since 1998, and I've been happily retired, but not very successfully, for the last 16 years. I represent Coachella Valley Disaster Preparedness Network. Did anyone attend the senior inspiration luncheon? Mm-hmm. Raise your hand. Did you hear our commercial at the end right there? We're all very passionate about caring about other people and making sure that they understand about being personally prepared for any level of disaster. And we all know that earthquakes are our number one disaster. You've all just completed your updates on your hazard plans. And so anyway, why am I here? Is because behind the scenes, what you don't know has been going on, many of you, Coachella Valley Disaster Preparedness Network has been a nonprofit for over 5.5 years. We're all volunteer. It actually started back in the year 2000 in Denver Hot Springs, the Sunline Transit, identified there was no fire station at that time. Long story short, we've come a long way. Our main training that we do now is personal preparedness, because it's each one of your responsibilities to be perfectly prepared first. You could be in charge of your incident command system, but if you're not perfectly prepared, that's going to be a problem. So every one of you need to be perfectly prepared. And then we take that a step further and we help our communities get their disaster plan, which is not fun if you're the volunteer. Just since 2023, we've offered three of the No Community Left Behind trainings, four Stop the Bleeds, and Active Shooter, two trainings. Outreach, we've done over 31. My request to you is to look at your cities, see where your priorities lie in being prepared, not being reactive. And I would request to be able to be heard at the executive session in June, please.
Okay, thank you for your report. Some of your time is up.
Yes.
We do have the handouts and we appreciate your work. Thank you as well. So thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so we'll move on to the announcement for the media. Next, the closing committee meeting will be Monday, June 12th. I'm here with that point here. Monday. We have no further comments. I appreciate the dialogue today, and everyone present, and our partner invited into the meeting at 10:09.